British Spy Stories, Season 2, The Kill Order. Episode 17. The flats that sit either side of the Velicha-Mihilyuskaja roadway in central Minsk have a uniformity about them. The repetitious grey regimented towers stretch up into the cold air of the Belarusian afternoon. Gabby puts a boot up on the front bulkhead of the car's interior, causing Panama to give her a look of disapproval, but he says nothing. Hans and the two of them have been parked at the base of the apartment block for an hour, waiting for Irina Voroboyov to appear. From Hans' research, Irina usually goes shopping in the early afternoon and picks up Jacob from a neighbour's house who runs an unofficial childcare for mothers on the estate. At a little after 2 o'clock, Irina appears at the entrance doors of the block of flats and starts her walk across the grassland to a row of shops about 10 minutes away. She wears a long padded white coat with fake fur around the collar and snow boots. They have agreed that Panama will be the one to make first contact, and Gabby will be near in case anything goes off the rails. The two of them clamber out of Panama's old Mercedes and follow Irina after a minute. The woman is in no hurry, it seems. She stops at a couple of shops that sell children's clothes and takes her time looking at items for Jacob. In the second shop, Gabby indicates to Panama that now is the time, and he walks up the same aisle as Irina and pretends to look through the racks. After a minute, he turns to her. "You couldn't help me, could you?" he says in Belarusian. "My little boy is 4, and I want to get him a coat, but I'm not sure what his size. Will these be big enough, do you think?" He points to the coats in front of him. Irina doesn't answer immediately and looks Panama up and down. She's a woman wary from her past experiences. Panama waits for her to complete whatever assessment her brain is making. Then she smiles. "How tall is he?" she says, which starts a 5-minute conversation between them, as Panama gains her confidence. She talks about her own boy being a similar age, and he talks about the difficulty of bringing up children as a single dad. Irina mentions the childcare that she uses, and they continue their conversation for several minutes after that. Panama says he's going for a coffee, and would she care to join him? Which she does. They walk to a cafe 2 doors down and sit at a table for 4. Irina says that she has only 10 minutes as she needs to collect her son. "Can I ask you something?" he says as the time for her to leave gets nearer. She looks up from taking a sip of coffee. "I wanted to talk to you about Florin Barbu." Her eyes flare, and her features drop into fear instantaneously. She starts to stand without saying anything. "Please," says Panama. "I'm not with Florin." "I don't know who you are," she says with anger in her throat. "But stay away from me and my son." "Irina," he says. "I want to help." "How do you know my name? I don't need anyone's help." She slams out of the door into the cold air and Panama follows her. "I'll call the police," she shouts at him. "We both know you won't do that, Irina," says Panama. "Florin is looking for you, and I can keep you safe." Irina disappears around the corner of the building and out of sight. Gabby, who's been in the cafe at another table, walks up and stands beside him. "Sorry," he says. "I went too quickly." "We'll work on her," says Gabby. "Let's regroup at the car." They turn and retrace their steps to where Hans sits in the Mercedes. Marcus Murphy only has hand luggage when he arrives at Berlin-Brandenburg Airport. He is quickly through the checks and out to the taxi rank that sits along the arrivals access road. This place is familiar to him from his 3 years as Berlin station chief of the MI6 operation based in the British Embassy. While the cab takes him along the Autobahn 113 towards the city centre, he looks back through the notes he made about Operation Windfall. In his gut, he knows that this op has the potential to hit 2 birds with 1 stone. If he can disrupt it, he can damage Sir Bernard and Agent Blackhawk at the same time. She had made a fool of him when she was accused of being a mole. She's a troublemaker, and if he can get her out of his hair too, then so much the better. The car drops him at the Mandala Hotel, on Potsdamer Strasse, and he disappears inside. He may only be in the city for 24 hours, but he wants a luxurious place to stay, hence this hotel. In his room, Marcus finds his old street map of Berlin that he used when he lived here. He traces the route from the hotel to a bar off Schillerstrasse, where he knows he'll find what he's looking for. Marcus eats in the hotel restaurant, then asks the doorman to get a cab for him. It takes him to the eastern end of the Charlottenburg district. Marcus gets out and starts to walk. The journey brings back memories for him of his evenings in the bars and restaurants in this area, when he lived here. It was during that era that he'd paid for sex for the first time, when his marriage started to be a burden to him. The girls in Berlin had only been too glad to take his cash, and he'd got used to it. It became part of his routine and made his marriage bearable. He doesn't blame Emily. He was the one who lost interest initially. Now she has embraced their newfound infidelity and doesn't try to hide it from him. He turns the corner and sees a neon sign above a dingy doorway. He drops down the steep stairs to a bar and takes a table in the corner, the only table left free in the place. He orders whiskey and pulls out a copy of Der Tagesspiegel from his coat pocket. Over the next hour, he monitors the group that he has come to see. Four people sitting on a table near where the stairs drop down from the street. He checks his phone for images of Teresa Baku and Oana Popper. Then he looks back at the group. It's definitely them. His objective now is to pick his timing to start a conversation. After another span of time, Teresa gets up to order drinks at the bar. Marcus walks over and stands next to her.
"Can I buy you a drink?"
he says in German. Teresa turns to him.
"Shoot your shot, Granddad. Why don't you?" "I'd like to talk," he says. "I'm not on the game,"
she says, putting her hand briefly on his.
"I'm not looking for that. I want to talk about your business bringing goods in from Belarus."
Teresa looks at him and flicks her eyes over his clothing and hair.
"You've got the wrong girl." "I don't think so, Teresa," he says. 5 minutes. That's all I want."
The barman drops four beers on the bar in front of her, and she gives him cash, but doesn't wait for the change. She picks up the bottles and looks at Marcus.
"I'm in the corner," he says,
nodding his head towards his table. Teresa retains her gaze on him, then walks back to her table. And Marcus resumes his seat and picks up his newspaper. 10 minutes later, one of the men from Teresa's table walks over and tells him to follow. The man leads Marcus to the corner where Teresa and Oana are sitting. They have made a space on one of the benches at the table for Marcus, and he sits in the center of the group.
"Who are you?"
says Teresa.
"A friend."
The group all smirk in disbelief.
"All right, friend," she says. "What do you want?" "You're working with a woman called Sabrina Miller."
The group give no reaction, so he continues.
"She's not who she says she is."
This time, Oana does react.
"What the fuck?"
she says.
"She works for British intelligence." "Who the fuck are you?"
says Oana.
"She bloody killed my brother. Are you telling me he was killed by a fucking spy?"
Teresa gives Oana a disapproving glance, and she stops herself, saying whatever she was going to say next.
"Why are you telling us?"
says Teresa.
"I thought you'd like to know."
"What's in it for you?"
"Nothing,"
he says too quickly.
"No one does something for nothing,"
says Oana.
"We want to see you succeed in your business."
"We?"
says Teresa.
"Who?"
"I'm not at liberty to say."
"Rez, if Sabrina is a fucking spy, we need to finish her,"
says Oana.
"She knows everything about us." "I know."
Teresa is a masterclass of calm. She looks at Marcus.
"You got any proof?"
Murphy delves into his pocket and pulls out a photocopy of Laravel's MI6 ID. He places it on the table between them all. Teresa picks it up and looks at every detail, then hands it to one of the men.
"Do you know where she lives?"
says Teresa.
"Yes,"
he says. He pulls out a pen from his inside pocket, tears a corner from his newspaper, and writes down an address, then hands it to Teresa.
"You work for Babu?"
she says.
"No. A freelancer. You could say that."
He stands up, and no one stops him.
"Nice doing business,"
he says to the group, then walks up the stairs to the street. Riverside looks in the mirror. The bathroom is small, but it's the only room he could find at short notice in Innsbruck, as skiing parties have taken most of the available beds. His brain automatically clicks through all of the times he has worked with or met Catherine. He had fancied her a few years ago, but it wasn't mutual. She has always been excellent at her job, but now he knows something has changed her. The old couple in Italy were not a threat, but she'd killed them for no reason. He doesn't think she can be actively deployed onto jobs until Psych Branch have at least interviewed her. He knows it's not his call, but something needs to be done. He gets dinner in the dining room on the ground floor, then walks out of the hotel and pulls out his mobile to make an encrypted call. His finger hovers over the contacts list, then he navigates to Marcus Murphy's details. Riverside stops again. Should he really be reporting Catherine? He likes her, but that can't stop him raising his concerns. He's doing it for everybody, and she'll be better off once it's all sorted. He presses the dial button, and the line rings in his ear. Murphy sounds flustered at the other end of the line. Riverside can hear a woman talking in the background, and guesses Marcus must be at home with his wife. Riverside starts to relate his observations about Agent Coniston, about how she seems to be taking matters into her own hands, and about how she appears to have killed civilians while in Italy for no reason. Not only that, she failed to carry out a kill order, and Riccardo Fazzoli is still in circulation, which could have knock-on effects for other operations and put MI6 personnel in danger. Riverside talks for 5 minutes before Marcus stops his flow.
"What are you trying to say, Rob?"
says Murphy.
"She needs help, Marcus."
"We can get Sykes to talk to her."
"It's not enough,"
says Riverside.
"She needs to be taken off duties until she's recovered."
"What do you suggest?"
"I'll talk to her. Convince her to take some time off."
"But you haven't found her yet,"
says Marcus.
"I will."
"When you find her, call me before you talk to her,"
says Marcus. Then the line goes dead. In his Berlin hotel room, Marcus pays cash to the girl, and she leaves him alone. But his mind is buzzing with a new question. How can he use a sniper who's gone off the rails to reinforce his case that Sir Bernard is losing control of MI6? This could be a great opportunity. Marcus goes to his laptop and switches it on, then logs into Oberon. He goes to the screen Create a New Job and starts a new kill order that he allocates to Catherine. He considers for a moment, then in the box labeled Target, he types Teresa Baku. He hits the final enter command and, given his level of authority, that makes the kill order live on the MI6 system.